This is The Hollywood Outsider, our weekly movie and TV podcast, which can be found at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Got a new episode every week. This is episode 244, and we are discussing our From the Outside In topic, which is, can a movie actually change your life? We're also going to talk about the latest in movie and TV news, as well as our own trivia segments. Upcoming releases, The Magnificent Seven and Storks, which I think we're all planning on seeing first day. Spoiler-free reviews of Blair Witch and Doom, the Untold Story of the Fantastic Four. Be sure to get the Ho on the Go with our Apple or Android apps. You can also find us on iTunes, where reviews are appreciated. Your podcast app of choice, Spotify, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Stitcher, we're everywhere. Please share the show on your social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Reddit, whatever it is you socialize on, my Snapchat, whatever the hell it is these days the kids are on. That's what you want to share it on, please. My name is Aaron Peterson, and joining me today are my fellow hosts, Scotty Clark.
What's going on, Aaron? How you doing?
I am doing well, sir.
Yeah, well. You've recovered from last week yet?
No. Oh, I had a busy week at work. Yeah, that was hell week is what I like to call it. Yep. Yep. Justin is still on sabbatical, so filling in for him today, he's an artist who watches a lot more TV than he probably should, as you heard in last week's TV episode, John Davenport.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for having me again.
Hey, and I think you sound better. Did you you change something? You finally did they drop? What?
Well, the left one finally did. The right one's always been kind of hanging out. The left one finally said, hey, I'm going to go finally see what the world's all about.
You went way longer on that than I ever thought was humanly possible, but okay.
But kudos. That was good on a flyer.
Your sex tape.
Yeah, that was... All right. Well, welcome back. Welcome back. Do you feel... You're a permanent guest. I feel like this is Johnny Carson. Johnny takes a lot of vacations. I think you're who filled in for God almighty.
Am I Joan Rivers? Are you trying to tell me I'm Joan Rivers?
I think so. Yeah. Except alive.
He's the Justin Timberlake to Jimmy Fallon.
Boom. That just works better.
On all the time.
That works better.
A little more current relevant.
So you're saying Johnny Carson makes me sound old? Is that what you're saying?
No, I was saying that half the listeners are you know, kids. Go ask your parents who Johnny Carson is. They'll tell you.
We gotta make this all accessible to everybody. So we have to have, you know, you with your 80s references and Scotty with the aughts references.
Yeah, I made a golden aughts. Judd Nelson reference and nobody got it, and it really makes me bummed. And no one heard it because I didn't do it on the show, but this is like before we did the show. I did a BAM Judd Nelson reference, nobody gets it.
Listen to the outtakes, that's all I'm saying.
It was good. Shut up. I'm just going to keep saying shut up until it's just me talking. All right. Well, I think we can relax. This is something, Scott, you pointed this out. Mr. Tom Cruise is not leaving Mission Impossible 6. He's still doing it. Were you actually worried that he wouldn't ever?
Absolutely not. Who else are going to get that runs that good?
Tell people.
Runs from explosions.
Yeah. Tell people what happened here.
What happened?
Yeah. With the Mission Impossible deal. What happened? Why did we think that he was going to leave?
Well, I mean, it's Hollywood, right? I mean, anything can happen.
It's true.
Does that mean there's a bunch of deal makings. There was the pre-production was halted because he was going to back out of the whole thing, apparently, you know, and just didn't want to do it anymore. So
you didn't read the article, did you?
No, I didn't.
All right. Well, we'll skip that. We'll skip it.
I mean, negotiations with Paramount took an unexpected turn with the studio and, you know,
the
went
Thadens
on from there.
Involved, the Thadens got involved, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The Thadens.
Good job, Scott. Good job. Okay, so what it
I
was...
I hope we're not cutting that out. We have
no,
to keep that.
No, that's going to stay. That's his own fault. That's his own fault.
You didn't do your damn homework, and yeah. I made a joke much later in the episode just for that.
John, what happened with Tom Cruise?
I don't know what happened. You know what? I got a better question for you.
Oh, we're gonna turn
Aaron?
It. We're gonna turn it. Okay.
I got a better question for you, Aaron. What happened with Tom Cruise?
All right, I'll explain it since nobody reads. Tom Cruise, apparently there was a financial dispute, and they weren't working out the deal that they wanted to work out, whatever that was. I don't know. He wasn't getting paid enough, something. And so they halted production. They delayed production because they couldn't work this out. They finally worked it out. Tom Cruise is still going to be in Mission Impossible 6. I don't think it matters anymore because now people are just like, what kind of ass show is this? What the ass?
Well, you know, you're absolutely right, Aaron. I think those are weird things that kind of happened. I mean, I personally think it's weird that Tom Cruise would have these sort of problems with Mission Impossible because doesn't he actually own the property or something at this point? He's got to with all the running.
You'd think so.
Yeah.
You dorks. We're moving on. You guys read the rest of this, right? Like everything else you read, I hope?
I read mostly everything else.
I just had comments saying, yeah, glad he's back. I'm not surprised. You know, that's what I was going with. I didn't realize there was issues.
I had a Robbie Amell joke for later, so.
All right. Well, last week was our big TV episode. If you didn't listen to it, it was actually very good, very long, but it was a lot of people were raving about it. Shocking. We got raves. I don't know. It was an accident, I'm sure.
I blame Troy.
Yeah, I do too. He brings information, and that helps.
Yeah,
that
he helps. Brings intimidating amounts of information.
Unlike this week, where no one reads anything. So now you know what happens when Troy's not
only
here.
Hours. Don't blame me.
This is true. Last minute. I got it. So let's check that TV episode out. We talk about what our favorite TV shows of the new season are, returning ones, as well as we have a TV pilot battle royale and determine what the best TV pilot of all time is. And if you haven't listened to it, it's really interesting how wrong it is. So go check that out. And also, I do want to ask, you better have seen this. I'm going to kick somebody's ass. Did you guys see the Passengers trailer? The one where Chris Pratt gets to live out my personal fantasy of being trapped alone with Jennifer Lawrence for like 90 years.
Yeah, I don't really see the problem. Is that a catastrophe? Is that a bad thing?
No, the movie should just be like an hour and a half of him smiling. Really?
Yeah, really? Should?
or is,
sounds like a Lubriderm commercial to me.
Matt in our Hollywood Outsider group had my favorite comment on this whatever. He's like, they should just call the movie Dear Penthouse. No, but seriously, did you guys watch this? It actually looks like a fantastic movie.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it doesn't, it seems like an idea that's been used before, but there's something special about it that did, maybe it's just because the two actors are so prolific and I love both of them so much that it makes it a little bit more exciting. But I mean, it's not really a new idea, right? People wake up from cryo sleep and they're the only ones awake. That's been done before.
Sure. But there's a catch. Why were they woke up?
That's usually explained in the first like 15 minutes of other movies. So yeah, I get it.
Here's what I would recommend. Nobody watch any more trailers because they will probably tell you why before you get the
I feel like this one showed too much already.
Yeah, that's why I didn't watch it because I had a feeling I was going to want to watch it anyway. So I did not watch this trailer.
Okay. Well, it looks good. It looks really, really good. Okay. Big movie news. Big movie news. Things are changing. China's movie business has become almost as large as North America's, with major players in China claiming they will be as big as North America Hollywood in 5 years. And Hollywood is desperate for China's movie bucks. And now, according to 60 Minutes, just ran a recent in-depth analysis of the situation, they claim that they are willing to sacrifice censorship for dollars because only 34 foreign films are allowed to be in that country in a year. Do you think this is the right solution? Do you think they're doing the right thing? Are you worried that that's going to affect censorship in our country?
I don't think it's going to affect censorship in our country at all. And I'm going to reserve the right to have feelings about it until we start seeing the fallout from it. You know, if making movies that are a little kinder to China's image means that they get to make more money, then fine. Companies have the right to make money so long as nobody's getting hurt. So, you know, and it's, I guess it'd be really cool in the long run because you're developing a whole bunch of movies that will obviously be seen by American children. So they're going to start seeing China in more of a lighter light and probably develop more because of that, probably develop an inspiration to want to see or to learn even more about it. So we'll be creating a generation of more open people. So that's really cool too. Besides, with the U.S. film market being what it is, they need to do something to continue to make the money they want to make.
I don't see this as being a censorship issue. I think there's really a fine line between censoring and playing to the audience. And now, in this case, the audience isn't necessarily those watching the films, but those who are making the rules in this country. I get that, but that's the audience, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my question is, what's the bigger worry here? Is the bigger worry that China's going to win the market share, or the thought of submitting to potential censorship? Is that which is scarier to those that are worried by this story?
I'm worried that China is going to buy my house. I'm worried about that one. And also, really, when I mean, on a serious note, when it comes to this, I'm more concerned with Hollywood is really trying to make their money back, and they're having a hard time with it. And the global market is really where they make their money now. So I think you're going to see, and this is just my opinion, a lot more of studios sacrificing product to get into that market. There are certain things that the Chinese are not happy with. They don't like Supernatural. They don't like a lot of – there's specific things that they are not comfortable with. So I think you're going to see studios shine away from that or those aspects because they're not going to make their money back. And mm-hmm. and they're not going to put a lot of money into – and you'll still get independent films and small films making those things. But you won't get the big budget effects bonanzas if China doesn't want those properties there, because they're not going to want to invest all $100 million, $150 million in a movie that can't play in China, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I just feel like we're worrying too much about it. I mean, no matter what, again, you're like you're talking about just the bigger blockbuster movies, the big ones. I mean, they didn't really say in the video I watched, unless I missed it. Like if they're doing 30, they're only allowing 34 now. Are they just raising the number, or are they just going to let any number in now?
Well, no. It seems like they're changing the rules so fast that they don't that there's no way to gauge that just yet.
Mm-hmm. That's an important point too, because I mean one of the stats that just staggered me is that China has something like 22 new screens created in the country every single day.
Yeah.
Like the movie business is just booming over there. They had an actress on there that said that it's increasing so fast that it's impossible to keep up. Like things change on a day-to-day basis. Like just how fast it's booming is I find it more impressive than scary. But back to my original point, I'm not really too worried about it, because even if it is just the bigger blockbusters, it's not like we're not going to have access to them, and it's not like we're not going to have other studios or smaller studios, not quite as the bigger blockbuster ones, still here. It's not like we're going to be just catering to China's audience or what they want and what their or what their government's going to let them see, or that kind of thing. We're still going to have tons of movies here, right?
We are, and isn't the Matt Damon movie that's coming out? Isn't that one a U.S. and China partnership movie? Mm-hmm. I mean, that one's automatically going to get shown in China, and it seems to have a supernatural feel to it, doesn't it?
It's got more of a fantasy feel to it. It's not ghosts; it's monsters. They're okay with monsters. I mean, they don't want the ghosts. I don't know.
But they didn't used to be okay with monsters. So I mean, that's another change. You couldn't have movies with monsters in them at all.
Yeah,
and that's changed. So there, I mean, it's happening. We could have paranormal movies in China again in the future.
Yeah, it's possible. All you got me thinking. You mentioned like 22 screens a day. Now I'm thinking of all those little kids working every day on those screens. I mean, it just sounds so much. I mean, who's making my Walmart
sweatshop theaters?
All those 3D glasses they all have to make with those little hands.
Exactly. I need my Walmart stuff made, eh? I don't want screens. I can get my Walmart stuff done, son. Let's go.
That iPhone's not going to put itself together by itself.
It's not going to put itself together.
Yeah,
no.
I just realized as soon as I said it.
Yeah, well, the world is becoming a global marketplace. We've talked about China a lot. My personal saying's been for like years now, that's why China is winning. And it seems more and more becoming the truth. And the more that we were reliant on that market, the more you're going to see our product switch that way, which is fine. I think they've got a lot of really cool ideas and concepts in China, but I also think China itself is a very, what's the word you want to use? I don't want to say it's Naziistic. But it's kind of like a Nazi-ish.
I think I'm saying it wrong, but
totalitarianism.
That's where I'm going with.
Oof. Look at the big brain on Brad. Yeah, it's that. But I like Nazism better, because then it makes it sound bad. And then maybe America will win. And we just lost all of our China listeners. Both of them. No, I'm looking forward to it. I'm just worried about censorship. I don't want a lot of... We already see so much of our movies today. They don't want to go for R ratings. They don't want to go for anything that won't be PG-13 a lot of times. So you don't get a lot of risque product. And I just worry about that. I am genuinely concerned about that.
I mean, it's like what we're going through right now with nothing but sequels and superhero movies. I mean, it's the same thing, only a little bit different, just because now we're trying to make another country happy. Mm-hmm. You know, they're trying to make us happy by because they finally realized, let's give the nerds what they want, me being one of them. And now that we have that. They're like, okay, well, not enough of them are going to the theaters anymore to make the money back on some of this. And there's movies that we're making that that are not making any money in the States that are killing it over there. Let's take Warcraft, for example.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a flop here, but it still made its money because of what happened over there. Pacific Rim's the other thing. Not nearly as big of a flop, but still made a heck of a lot more money overseas than it did here.
Mm-hmm.
All right, China. Well, thanks for owning us. I mean, really, we should all learn Mandarin. You should take the time, learn some Mandarin. It's going to be important in the next 10 years. Spawn is getting a makeover. Spawn is getting a makeover as creator Todd McFarlane compared his intended new film to Jaws. What?
That comparison to Jaws is not nearly as bad as it sounds. It's not like saying it's.
It is to me.
He's not calling it as like high a quality a film as Jaws, or it's going to be as popular of a movie or anything like that. He compared it in the fact that the movie Jaws, you barely see the shark until like the final act of the movie. You catch glimpses of a dorsal fin. You may see a tiny bit of his body underwater, but the villain or the is invisible for the majority of the movie. Mm-hmm. That's how he's comparing it to Spawn. Whereas Spawn, the last movie, even though I haven't seen it, was the main character. He was prevalent. You were following him around. So it's not saying that this is going to be, you know, a Spielberg movie or anything like that, but he's just not going to be as visible as he was in the previous films. So like more of like an unseen menace or hero. So,
Not hero. I don't know about heroes. Is Spawn really?
Well, he's
a hero?
Anti-hero, right?
He's a massive vigilante anti-hero kind of thing. I'm kind of excited about the idea, though very apprehensive about it too. Because I mean, when I got into art and drawing, and we'll get into this a little bit more later, but Image Comics was what got me going. Spawn was what got me really interested. It came out right around the time that my art skills were developing. And so I love the story and I love the artwork behind it and the creator. However, the description, when I hear the description, this is what I see. I see Jason running around the woods, materializing, killing kids, right? Only the reverse. So you got your good guy who's actually the scary monster that's going around killing really bad people. Not killing kids, but killing really bad people. So what's to make me invested in being afraid for the really bad people who are going to be killed by the good guy that we don't see that often?
You kind of want them dead. So.
Yeah, you kind of want them dead or you want them punished. So I think that the idea may have some legs to it, but it can also turn out to be really just goofy because how are you going to be able to take that seriously?
Well, especially because the character Spawn, again, I've prefaced that I haven't seen it. I've seen the box art and I've seen some of the comics. He's a freaking cool looking character. You know, he's something that you want to see. You want to have your eyes on a lot more. You know, you don't want him hidden away and just killing people off screen or something like that. Or just seeing a hand come up, or I don't know how he attacks people. I don't know anything about it, but he's cool looking, right?
He's really cool looking. I mean, but there's a lot of things about him in the comics that they can use to play off of that. The shadows, which could be his cloak, writhe and move in the shadows. And what you think is a shadow is actually his cloak about to engulf you and kill you or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or the chains that you think you're walking through in a building are actually the chains that he uses that are kind of like, if you think about Hellraiser's chains, that's mm-hmm. kind of what his chains can do. There's a lot of different things that they could play with. But you're right. I mean, the part of the joy of Spawn is the visual look of him, and if they can choose to do it right and do the imagery right, and if they do that, fine, it'd be great, it'd probably be awesome, but I still don't know how I'm supposed to be invested in watching invested by being afraid of watching bad people die. I should be cheering at the screen for that sort of thing, or bad people get punished. I mean, I should be cheering at the screen. I don't know how to get invested in the idea. Maybe they'll prove me wrong. They'll get some major, you know, awesome director in there that will play with the imagery just right. I mean, if Todd McFarlane is involved as much as it sounds like he's going to be, he may be able to make it, but I don't know. I'm excited, but apprehensive.
Wasn't he involved in the original Spawn?
He was. I don't think he got a writing credit for it, but he was involved, and they threw him in a la oh my God, Stan Lee. He was in the end of the movie a la Stan Lee. But I think he might have had some creative direction to it, but it was also the 90s. The movie in the 90s, for the 90s, not bad. Not great, but campy. And it's a comic book hero movie in the 90s. So what do you think it's going to be like?
Yeah, that's true. Not good.
Not good.
Not good. All right, well, moving on. Johnny Depp is circling Labyrinth. Not a remake, but a tale on L.A. detective Russell Poole, who set out to solve the murders of Tupac and the notorious B.I.G. Man, this is one of those things where it has been an unsolved mystery forever. And I guess this takes place like 20 years after the murders and he goes back. I mean, it's the way I'm understanding it. How do you guys feel about making a movie that looks at – this is kind of reminiscent of Zodiac, right, where they didn't actually find the killer, but they might be pointing fingers to killers and to what's going on. But it's a real-life event. Do you feel like that's just treading too lightly on the memory? Do you feel like it's too close? John, you got an opinion?
I don't think it's too close. I mean, 20 years is a good amount of time, and people were really – I think people will still find that story fascinating, especially the fact that nobody's been able to figure out – what the cause of it or who the perpetrator was. I'm excited to see Johnny Depp do something that's not a character, that doesn't involve him putting on makeup. It doesn't involve him walking around with a funny accent. I'm excited to see that Johnny Depp versus the character actor Johnny Depp. So that's how I feel.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I mean, wasn't Hoffa also on Unsolved? And I mean, granted, yeah, he was a bad guy. He wasn't like adored or loved or anything like that. He was, you know, but
I think it was Unsolved and Unfound.
They're still looking for him.
But I mean, I could see this story be more about making you feel sorry for this detective than actually like kind of giving information or pointing fingers. You know, if he's that disgraced and was given that much of a hard time for not being able to solve it, this is why, guys. This is everything that happened, but making an interesting story at the same time.
I'd be interested. I wasn't a big Notorious B.I.G. fan. I mean, he had like one good song with P. Diddy and everything else. It was just like, But Tupac, I mean, Tupac is a pioneer. As far as I'm concerned, in the realm of rap, and even though I didn't love every song he did, he was a lyrical master. And it just always bothered me that we never found out, you know, what happened to him. You know, there's a lot of rumors. There's a lot of, was it, because I'm not even going to name who it might be because I don't want him to kill me. So, but there's a lot of people that may or may not have been in Straight Outta Compton that were fingers were pointed at. I'm just saying.
So hey, you still listen to music too.
So I'm just saying, I don't know, but I'm really curious what they're going to do with that. And I agree with you, John, that Johnny Depp needs to stop doing that stuff. He needs to stop putting on makeup and putting on all this crap on his face and start being an actor again, because people are really getting tired of the Pirates of the Caribbean Johnny Depp. Unfortunately,
you know, I think one of the, I was looking through his IMDb page when I was reading this article just to see when was the last couple of times he's done this. So one of them was the Angelina Jolie movie that didn't go anywhere. Right. Mm-hmm. And the other one was Transcendence, right? Where which I didn't see that one either. But and part of the reason why I didn't see it is because I didn't care about the story for either one of those movies. And that's why I think this whole idea of him doing something that will limit his need to be a character and be more of an actor seems to be a really good idea, to give him at least a vehicle that has some legs to it. So I'm really excited about that part of it.
He'll probably put on a fat suit and some prosthetics. And I got to be a different kind of detective.
Like, damn it, Johnny, you had one job. One job.
Speaking of Angelina, before we move on, should we have like a moment of silence for Brangelina? Should we do that? I don't know if that's important in the world. I don't know where that stands in the scheme of things that they broke up. Angelina.
Do we know why yet?
What's that?
Do we know why yet?
He slept with Coulthard or what's her name? Marion.
Coulthard? What?
Coulthard. How do you pronounce her last name?
That's
Cotillard.
That's speculating. You don't have photos. We don't know what happened. They broke up. Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt. They broke up.
Ay, pobrecita.
And honestly, Brad Pitt, playa. Fist bump. All right. Is there anybody he hasn't slept with in Hollywood at this point? Good on you, bro. Good on you.
I want to know the secret. Oh, it's to be Brad Pitt. That's what the secret is.
Yeah, exactly.
The secret bullshit.
A lot of guys are like, what's it going to be? Well, I could be like Brad Pitt. No, you couldn't. You really couldn't. No.
You'd well, apparently, John, you just got to be a fan of Lost. That's what worked for you, right?
Yeah. You know, I... I had to do some damage control for that.
Oh, for last week? Yeah, good for you.
Her comments on the Facebook group were cracking me up.
She came home when she got to that part, and she slammed the door, and she's like, "Did Aaron just insinuate that all you have to do is to get a pass to my vagina is to watch Lost?"
No, I said it. I didn't insinuate it. I pretty much just said it.
And that's
actually
what I said.
I reiterated. You said it. So really,
those words actually didn't come out of my mouth.
I'm pretty sure they did. It's just how you were your perception.
No, I insinuated. You inferred.
I think
if there was a way we could go to the tape and actually, like, you know, see what was actually said, but
we don't tape anything here.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that because it will probably make me look bad. But I will say that he did say he would bounce her down some steps for some time with who was it? Haley Atwell.
How did you forget?
Haley Atwell. Yeah, yes.
Haley and
Atwell.
I also said that she would bounce me down some steps for that, too.
what she
was most absurd about was the fact that I voted against Lost.
Really?
That was what you had to do damage control for?
That's what I had. She was trying to get past that part, but then it transferred over to that. How dare you vote against Lost? So I didn't know what to do, and so I just owned up to both and just saw what happened. So,
well, yeah, I mean, basically, I you said the magical key to your wife is something you didn't think was good enough to vote for. So I get women logic here. It makes sense to me.
Right.
Yeah, I get
good
it.
Good for you.
Mm-hmm. She's right. You deserve to get tossed down some steps. Cool.
I do.
Whew. If you guys want to understand that better, listen to last week's episode. Listen to the TV episode. It makes more sense. Let's get in. You know what? Let's get back.
You know
to
what?
The heart.
We also now that's two episodes in a row. We've talked about getting a free pass to my wife's nether regions.
Well, you brought it up, so really, this is on you. Good luck with that.
Actually, Scott brought it up.
Yep.
Okay. Good job, Scott. Way to ruin his home, his happy home. Now let's bring the heart back to marriage. Let's bring the feeling back, and we're going to talk about our From the Outside In topic, which is, can a movie change your life? And you know, Snowden just came out. It didn't do very well. It's already going to be gone by the time you probably hear this. But it's one of those movies that some people feel like it should have changed people's perception of things. You go in, you see it, you feel differently about how the government does things. There's a lot of movies in that ideology, in that realm, that people feel like should change people's minds, should change people's lives. And I want to know from you guys, do you think a movie or even a TV show, whatever, has the actual power to motivate someone to make a change, whether it be in their life or whether it be, you know, their personal opinion of something?
I don't see why not. I mean, I think we're all in agreement that movies are art. And that's kind of one of the big reasons we have art, right, is to make you think and make you possibly see a different way. Not necessarily that all film is propaganda or anything, but you know, there are themes in movies, and there are reasons to make your brain think a different way. I mean, that's kind of what we do. I'm not saying that all movies are documentaries that are out to, you know, with an agenda to make you think a certain way, but that's one of my favorite aspects of movies, that kind of make me look at something in a different light, or just have a different, not necessarily have a different opinion, but at least see the other side of something. And that's not the only reason that I go see movies. Sometimes I just want to go and see stuff blow up. But, you know, the things that kind of challenge me as a person, I think are a positive thing, even if my mind isn't swayed, but at least giving me perspective. So I don't see why movies can't give me perspective.
I totally agree. I mean, there's been I go to the movies to go watch things blow up, too. I go to the movies to just have a good time. But there's at least twice in my life where something in a movie or a special or a documentary absolutely crumbled me, tore down every aspect of what I thought and saw. And usually it's usually about myself when it has this effect, but it completely tears me down and forces me to really look at who I was or what I was doing or where the block is. And I mean, I absolutely love that about movies. It's, I think there's a reason why everyone loves that about movies, and why we do this. So yeah, I mean, how could you avoid it? How can you avoid having something like that affect you?
Well, let me ask a question, a little deeper question. Okay. If someone were a racist or a sexist or a bully, is it possible? Do you think it's possible that a movie could illuminate that situation for them to see the errors in their ways?
Absolutely. The possibility is always there. I think the possibility is absolutely always there. Just like I said, I think when that happens to people, it completely crumbles them down too. Most notably, there's been a couple instances, through my years of following like Kevin Smith around for what he's done. And looking more into like the Westboro Baptist Church, there's been times where just him in general has had an effect on them, where to the point where at least one of the daughters within the Westboro Baptist Church has officially left. I don't know if it has really a lot to do with the relationship that she has with Kevin Smith, but there was a lot during that period. There was a lot that was going on where she ended up leaving the church.
I mean, it's going to boil down to the person that's viewing it. I mean, if you're going to go into something without any even smidge of an open mind, then no, it's not going to change your mind. All it's going to do is it's going to give you fuel to continue with your thinking. I kind of consider myself a person that I'll go into any movie with at least somewhat of an open mind, and just to see, just because I want to understand how the other person thinks. I don't know how many people do that. How many people will go in and say, yeah, okay, I'm going to hear you out. No, I've got my mind made up before I go in to see the movie, and I'm not going to listen to anything whatsoever. I'm just going to let it make me more angry about whatever it is that I've got a problem with.
I was just curious, because it's always something that I've wondered, if someone has that, if they, I don't want to say, well, it is negative. If somebody has that negative view, maybe it's because they were raised that way, or it's because that's just the person they are. They're just not a good person. And they saw something that enlightened them. If they've ever actually changed course, just gone a different direction, realize, man, I can't believe I'm that guy on the screen. You know, maybe somebody watched American History X and realized, wow,
I was just going to say that.
Yeah, I'm that guy. I always wonder if those kinds of stories are out there. I'm sure they are. I don't know of any, and I thought maybe you guys might have heard of any. So can it modify your personal perception of a topic or a situation? We're going to talk about that changed your personal life, but can it actually change how you perceive things on anything?
Okay, I got a story, and forgive me for this story, but because...
Are you going to be in trouble again? Are you going to be in trouble again? Seriously?
No, I'm not going to be in trouble again. So okay. I graduated art school in 2003, and I went to one of the more prestigious art schools in this country.
La-di-da, sir. All
right. It is really la-di-da. However, because of the way I lived my life from after graduation, which was I graduated, I tried to get a job. And then somewhere in that line of trying to get a job, I linked up my life to somebody who was just absolutely wrong for me. Mm-hmm. So trying to get that job went from I need to try to get an art job but I was also definitely afraid of the idea of working freelance. In the process of doing that, I ended up linking up with somebody in my life for that period of time where I didn't have time to be in that relationship, have mm-hmm. a job, and try to be an artist. And when I tried to be an artist, nothing worked. The short version of it is that it became a very abusive time for me. Whenever I tried to be an artist, some abuse would come in. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to be happy, I ended up dropping something that meant a lot to me, which was my artwork. Now, fast forward a couple years, that person's now out of my life. She invited me to leave, and I took the invitation to leave. And then I ended up in a bad spot where I was living in a hovel. I had no furniture, nothing to my name, just me, my two little dogs, my computer, and that's it, and my clothes.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a dream, actually. And Scott and I are like, this is awesome. Can I do that?
Right.
So then I start talking to this chick who was somebody that I knew back when I was in high school. And we were just talking and talking and talking. And then, like magic, she shows up in my life and decides that I'm going to be her little project. And not really in a bad way. She didn't really make the decision, but she decided that I was the one, and she hasn't left since. In the process of making that decision, she has done everything she can to slowly get me back in the drawing. So she, you know, pushed me. She got me back to where I needed to be, you know, and she was trying. And I started committing more and more to the idea of I'm going to come home from work. I'm going to do some artwork. And I've done some jobs. I've done T-shirt design. I have a T-shirt store. And I've had some success, but the failures always started creeping in. Like, I'd go to my buddies and be like, hey, I'm doing this thing. It's really cool. I'm really excited about it. And my buddies would be like, so? And these are people who have been friends of mine for years. The concern in that is that someone who's apathetic to what makes you happy, something that, you know, you pour your energy into it, and you have these people who are quote unquote close to you, and you pour your energy into something and they're apathetic to it, is almost as bad as being negative about it. Or it's actually, to me now, the same thing. So fast forward a little bit, lying in bed, watching Kevin Smith, do his whole routine for Kevin Smith's Burn in Hell. Mm-hmm. An hour and 5 minutes into it, and I'm going to paraphrase it, but he says, the world is full of why. You're going to go out in the world, you're going to throw a rock, and you're going to hit somebody who will say why to one of your ideas. Why would you want to do that? Why? Why even bother? What makes you think you could do that? But why? And so instead of filling your life with people who ask why, fill your life with people who say why not. Hey, I'm going to go do this thing. All right, why not? Let's do it. I'm there. What do I need to do for you? Fill your life up full of positive people. Now, I'm sure and I know in my life that so many people have said something to those lines to me. But for whatever reason, when Kevin Smith said it right there on my TV, the next thing my poor wife knows is that her 250-pound, 6'2" man of a husband who can walk through a wall if he felt like it, is blubbering like a 2-year-old over something the fat man said on the TV screen. Because it broke me. It absolutely tore down something that I didn't think about, I didn't consider. And from that point on, I started accepting more positive things into my life and really just distancing myself from people who only take and only ask why and only want versus and don't give back to me by being a part of that. And I'm better at identifying it. And it was only because of that whole little scene of hour and 5 minutes and watching Kevin Smith do his fat man routine that I hit me, and that I will forever be grateful to the guy. He will never understand it, but I'll be grateful just for that one moment.
Wow. Top that, Scott. You got anything?
I got to follow that.
I don't want to follow it, so I'm letting you go.
Well, the original, that was awesome. Mm-hmm. That was seriously a really good story.
Great
John.
Story. Probably should have held it. I'm not saying you went early, but whatever. It's cool.
Well, the original question was, can a movie modify your perception of a topic or situation? And my answer to that is, I would be more apt to be open-minded to a movie or somebody's piece of art than I would to a Facebook post.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, that's all that Facebook is flooded with, especially with the political season and that kind of thing. So if nothing else, even if it doesn't change your mind, it's going to inspire some real conversation. And that is another thing that I just absolutely love about movies is walking out of the theater and having like a real deep conversation about a movie you watched. And even if it is something that is, you know, an issue, whether it be a social issue or something like that, or just something science-based or whatever, real conversation that is spawned because of watching a movie, it might let you see the other people's side, but it's so much fun and it's intriguing, and it makes sure it exercises your brain, and I like it. So yes, it can, but will it for everybody? No, that's my answer.
That's good. Well, I know John already alluded to it, but have you personally ever had a movie or TV show or anything change your life or your perception, opinion of a topic of importance? Scott, you can go first if you got a few. or one?
Sure. I mean, there's ones we've talked about before that have actually altered my life, which isn't the exact question you're talking about. But, you know, Dead Poet Society, Mr. Holland's Opus, things that have made me realize I wanted to be a teacher. Sure, we've gone over that. But to be more direct with the question, something like American Beauty is a movie that and I know that that movie has gotten made fun of and parodied and that kind of thing for the kid that like wants that sees beauty in like a dead bird and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But that kind of made me just look at life a little bit. If somebody could find something interesting in a plastic bag blowing in the wind, you know, it kind of made me look at the world a little bit differently. I've never been, I know John's an artist. I've never been really big into art, or at least up to this point. But about the time that movie came out, I was actually taking a visual arts class at in college. And I just started just really getting into it and just like starting to appreciate what was going on canvases and on screens and that kind of thing. It just really kind of opened up my mind to the importance of art and starting to recognize those different artists. So I think that movie is attributed to that. And another one, I'm not sure if this falls in line with what you're looking for, but the movie Requiem for a Dream.
Oh, whoa.
Really messed with my head for, as it did a lot of people's minds. Again, raised in the environment I was, you know, drugs was never anything that was even a consideration to begin with. But, you know, after you get out of the house and you start to look at making decisions in life, I'm telling you, I feel like Requiem for a Dream is a movie that should be viewed by high school kids, because after watching that movie, I never had any desire to touch anything. I mean, even whether recreational or, you know, at one point I was trying to lose some weight like the woman in the movie was, and considered taking like, you know, Stackers or something like that to try to bring some weight down. And I will never touch anything like that as long as I've got blood pumping through my veins. I'm not going to, that movie just scared the snot out of me. In terms of just what drugs do to people and their lifestyles. And but like I mentioned earlier, it kind of showed me that side of it, and that things like that are prevalent, not just in a recreational use, but people are abusing it even when they're not realizing they're abusing it. Mm-hmm. So that just kind of made me see the other side of it and made me sit up and think real hard about it. So,
oh man, the ending, like 5 minutes to that movie, still disturbs me. To no end. Just disturbs the hell out of me.
In the club or with the refrigerator?
Just the two girls and the... Yeah. Like, what just happened? What? That was insane. If you've never seen it, go watch it. And then go wash yourself. Just clean
go wash
yourself.
Your eyes.
Yes, your eyes. Wash your... Brush your teeth. You will feel dirty everywhere. Everywhere.
Yeah. Also, where are those clubs?
Scott, you horrible person. I like you. John, what about you? You got any other ones that changed your life?
I got all sorts of things that changed my life. You know what? I want to talk about, let's go with thinking about a topic differently. So true crime is a big deal, especially it's getting even more positive now. And I've always really liked listening and watching true crime. Mm-hmm. Last year, I watched The Staircase. If you don't know what The Staircase is about, it's a courtroom drama about the death of Kathleen Peterson and what happens when they basically take her husband, Michael Peterson, to court and try him for murder. I always thought watching true crime stuff and stories about it was that, you know, they always knew what the actual story was. They had proven it. They've laid it down. It's all written in stone. And that's actually what happened. And by watching The Staircase, when you're going through it, and they don't dramatize anything. They're showing you actual documentary footage from the courtroom, and you see the investigation from the defense side. So think about making a murderer with a much better protagonist. Mm-hmm. A protagonist that you can identify with a lot more. They tear his life down because they don't have a lot of evidence to him. They have, of course, I don't want to tell you too much about it because watching this documentary series is pretty interesting to watch. But they tear his life down, they find whatever they can, and they develop a story based off of what they find. It's not really true. I mean, some of it could be true, some of it could be not. But what scares me is that the prosecution can just make up a story for 12 strangers to decide whether or not that's true. It scares me to the extent that when I go to a buddy's house, and I'm using a buddy in this reference because I already made a joke once in this episode and then once last episode about throwing my wife down a set of stairs. So let's use a buddy for this instead.
Good call. Good call. Smart guy.
If I go to a buddy's house and I walk in and try to, and I see that there's blood everywhere, and I try to do some whatever life saving measures I can and call the police, there's a chance that they can decide, well, we got somebody here. Let's just make up a story and we can throw him in jail. I mean, that's a possibility. So but now I just walk in really slow, make sure there's no blood all over anything, and then leave if I see there's a bloody mess. Just leave. Just out. I'm not going to even mess with it, because that's how scared the whole idea of what our criminal justice system can do to you. If they can't find the actual answer, they're going to find the most logical answer or the best answer they can make up. And it scares me.
Well, I am crossing you off my call when I kill somebody list. So that. Scott, are you still available for that list?
Yeah, I'm good, man.
Okay, just checking. All right, continue, John.
I'm good. I mean, that's there's that. I can go into how a comic book documentary got me back into drawing comics again. But
yeah, you know, tell that story. Seriously, I mean, short version. You don't have to tell me like life story. Well, just
yeah, the short version is that you go, you know, piggybacking off of the idea of my wife and Kevin Smith got me back into drawing art. Drawing, I was still very much lost as to what I was trying to do. I was doing night jobs as far as some logo design, and I was making up my own t-shirts for one a day t-shirt websites, but none of that was really like, it was feeding something, but it wasn't really feeding me. The skills were developing, but it wasn't really feeding the soul, which is why I like to do the art. And then I come home from Christmas this last year and I see that, The Image Revolution was on sale on Microsoft Video, so I bought it. The Image Comics started in 1992. It was started by Todd McFarlane, Jim Lee, Rob Liefeld, and a whole slew of other guys who I was idolizing in 1992, and they started this comic company with brand new stories, which just threw me into the idea of doing comics. I was just so excited. When I was a kid and I was watching this, and this is what got me even more excited about doing artwork. I watched this documentary and that spark lit up back inside of me. And I started getting excited again. I started feeling the ghost of that kid who got into art for the first time just by revisiting all this stuff about Image Comics. Mm-hmm. And that got me back to a point where this last year, I've really focused on, I'm not going to try to do t-shirt art. I'm just going to do... I'm going to work on my comic art. I'm going to work on my figure studies. I'm going to work on getting myself to a point where I can make my own story and I will develop it. If not, leave my daytime job and go full-time comic artist is really where I want to go.
That's very interesting. I hope you get there, by the way. I hope you get there.
Thank you. I hope I do too.
Okay. Are you guys ready to learn more about Aaron Peterson than you ever really needed to know?
I am ready for Stories with Aaron.
You want to pull out the fire? Or?
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Man. Let's do this. Oh, dude, pull out the fire.
I wish I had the fire handy. I don't have a fire handy. Damn it!
We wouldn't be able to hear the fire anyways.
I don't know if I can do the effect while I'm talking, but I'll try.
I can get like a candy wrapper or something and just hold it up against the microphone.
Where's my phone? Hold
on. Do a little Foley.
That'd be great.
I got this.
All right. Well, number one. Oh, you got this. I don't know what that means. Does that mean you're going to throw me down a set of stairs?
I can throw you down a set of stairs too, but I got this. Wait, where is it? I can do rain.
Purple rain. Purple rain.
That does not sound like rain. That sounds like pee.
It doesn't sound like fire to you?
It sounds like a little bit, but it's kind of making me have to pee. So let's just go with nothing. Let's just go with nothing. Okay, so... Number one, my first one. There's actually four, but I'll make them. Three of them I'll make quick. One of them I won't. Sidney Lumet's 12 Angry Men. If you've never seen it, it's a great movie, honestly. It's one man believes in reasonable doubt. He's in a room with 11 people that just want to go home, really. Everybody wants to go home. They want to be done with this case. But one guy stood up for everything he thought was right. He was determined to follow the letter of the law, and he didn't care what anybody thought. He was so steadfast in the fact that he wanted to do the right thing that he had to stay there. He had to be steadfast, and he had to convince other people that they needed to do the right thing. They needed to do the due diligence. They needed to do just the right thing. I mean, I said it like five times, but that's exactly what it was. And that is the movie that turned my eye to criminal justice and to always listen to the facts, not the conversation. And when I went to college, I went to college for criminal justice because that movie really helped me turn that corner. It's a powerful film, and I think it's a statement on our society even today. And it really did change my life, especially because of, you know, where I had been in my past. I had maybe been associated with the criminal element. I'm just saying. And this kind of showed me doing the right thing, even though I had good moral lessons from my mom and my grandpa. It showed me that doing the right thing is important, and standing up for people that can't stand up for themselves is even more important. And that really, really inspired me and really changed my entire outlook and what I cared about and a lot of other things in my life. That's one of them. Number two is Gary Marshall's Nothing in Common. I talked about this one when we talked about Gary Marshall after he passed away. But that movie where Tom Hanks is a son and Jackie Gleason is his dad, they have an estranged relationship. They're not close. His mom and dad end up getting a divorce, and his dad ends up with diabetes, and he goes through a lot of medical issues, as well as he's a cantankerous old bastard. I had a really bad relationship with my father, and this was kind of the movie that, and seriously, it was a movie that really helped me get over that hump, get over my own, I wouldn't say pettiness, because I think it was well-earned, but get over my issues with my father and say, you know what, it's important to amend that and actually say, okay, we've gotten to this point. History, the past is in the past. Now let's work on the future. And that movie really was a huge turning point for me. If it wasn't for that movie, I don't know if I would have gotten there, and that's a true story. Alfred Hitchcock's Rear Window, I could talk about 16 hours, and everybody would still not get all the importance that movie had for me. But if it wasn't for Rear Window, I wouldn't be here doing this right now with you guys. I just wouldn't. That is a movie that inspired me to pursue film, to pursue what I loved about film, to look into film, to study shots, and to study filmmaking, and to study writing, and to study cinematography, and all the other things that I ended up doing. All of it spawned from that one movie. And it changed my life so much, it's just hard to grasp. And then there's a movie called Roots. And I'm kind of curious, have either one of you ever actually seen Roots? Or you just know of it?
I just know of it.
Okay. Well,
in unison.
Yeah, exactly. And you guys in unison. Two white guys. Yeah, we know of it. Yeah. it's based on Alex Haley's family history, and it followed Kunta Kinte as he is abducted and sold into slavery, and then it follows through as Chicken George carries his family to freedom. That's really the very, very short version of what this miniseries was about. And why did it change my life? And it's a very personal story, but I'm going to try to be very, very honest about it. I've said this numerous times on the show. I was raised mostly across the streets from the projects. Very few white kids in my grandparents' neighborhood, so my friends were mostly black, and we were all poor. So there may or may not, as I said, have been criminal behavior. I am not implicating myself. I do not know what the statute of limitations is on certain things. But that was the way of the world for me at that point. And they liked me because they knew me, but overall, most of my black friends, they just couldn't stand white people. That's an honest truth. They couldn't stand white people. To me, it was kind of ridiculous because, A, I was white. They liked me. I don't understand what the problem was. But from my perspective, the only white people that were giving them any trouble were cops. And I'll be honest, my friends weren't angels. So I kind of understood I understood it to a degree. Now, Roots was on VHS or TV or something like that. And my friend Lamont wanted me to come over and watch it with his family, which to me was great. Here's 6 hours of Kill Whitey. That's, you know, when you're a teenager, that's how you perceived it. The story gets better. I swear, the story gets better. And I watched it. I watched it with his family over the course of a few nights, and everything absolutely clicked. And I'm not saying that they were justified in their feelings for... that's hard to explain. Okay, I'm not... what's the best way to word this?
Dance, monkey, dance.
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to dance.
Don't try so hard.
I firmly believe you're responsible for your own actions, and you can't blame people today for things that happened yesterday. But I understood the anger after I watched that with them, because textbooks often soften the history. My white relatives soften the history. Roots didn't soften the history. It was very brutal. And then hearing the stories of Lamont's parents and their parents and how their ancestors were treated directly from them, as opposed to reading it in a textbook. Well, I mean, honestly, I'd be angry too. The easiest way I can say it is, for us, blacks sitting at the back of the bus was forever ago, right? I mean, for us, you know, we read it somewhere, we saw it on a TV show. We didn't experience it. For them, it was their grandma. You know what I mean? Does that make sense? So,
yeah.
So to be there to watch that with them really had a profound effect on me. And I don't say that as justification. I think most people, most white people I know that I associate with, are pretty much colorblind these days. It's, you know, it's not like 20 years ago where you might have a white friend who does nothing but black jokes all day. It's just not like that anymore, from my perspective. Times have changed, even if the news want to paint all white people as hateful bigots. It's just not the case in my life. I can't speak to the world. I'm just speaking in my life. But watching that with his family opened my eyes in a way that I could never really explain, and I've clumsily done it here, but I've had black friends for years. I had black friends for years, but I didn't understand them until that movie. And that's why it was profound. It was huge for me. Did I do it justice?
I think you did it justice. Yeah, totally. when you pointed out that for us, it was years ago for the back of the bus thing, but for them, it was their grandparents. I mean, that makes it so much closer for them than it ever would be for us. You did a really good job describing it just by that phrase right there.
So really, I should have just done that from the get-go. Made it about 30 seconds long.
Well, I mean, you got there. You got there eventually. That's a point in your direction, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also, I mean, and that conversation with them watching that movie is a big portion. You know, I've always, and on the show, I've said it many times. Racists are afraid of talking about race because they're racist. I don't think people who aren't racist should ever be afraid of talking about race, because if you're not afraid of it, it's just a conversation. And they're the ones that actually taught me that. It's not a bunch of white people that told me that. It's not my mom. It's not my grandpa or anybody else. It was that family that was a very important thing to them. It's like, you're white. You're the only white guy in the neighborhood. You're the only white guy with Lamont will hang out with, for whatever reason. And I think they respect the fact that I wasn't one of those white kids that was trying to be black. You know, I was just an asshole from birth, and same asshole I am today. They were adamant that, you know what, if you can have an honest conversation about it like I did with them and they did with me, things can change. Things can get better. Things can improve. And you can understand. And it was very, very just life-altering for me. And I wish more people could have that experience. And if you haven't seen Roots, seriously, see that. If you want something shorter, because Roots is very long, you can 12 Years a Slave, I think, is a pretty close example that'll help you understand a little better, too.
I've seen that one. That one's hard to watch. You know, for me, the idea of racism was something that I was only really confronted in when we moved to the States. I'm originally from the Republic of Panama. And growing up in Panama, I mean, granted, I have pale skin. I have light eyes. And so I was more a target. I could have been more of a target if I thought in these terms of some racism versus like my brother, who's dark skin, dark eyes. But the whole concept really didn't really affect me, or didn't start. I wasn't confronted with it until we moved to the States, I went from the Republic of Panama, which back in 87, when we moved to the States, Panama was more like in 77.
Okay.
Was what the time frame was. It's at least in my perspective, if I were to compare the two, because I jumped to the States to a completely different world, where I have to figure out how to be a kid, young teenager, late kid, in a world where there are angry black people, which I don't know how to deal with that, because I've never dealt with angry black people. They were always my friends, or Hispanics who wouldn't accept me because I don't look like a Hispanic. I look like a white kid. But even though I was speaking better Spanish than they were, which I never got that. That was just not fair. I'm still mad about that, man. You guys were supposed to be my friends. just because I have these light eyes, man. It's not fair. Anyhow, you know, so listening to what you're saying, it was, I mean, I can totally understand where you can come from with that, where being confronted with it in that light. And see, and that's why that line you said was for them, it was their grandparents. For us, it was years and years ago. That's where I'm kind of, where I can actually come from and understand what you're saying with that, because that's what it kind of was for me when I went from Panama to Fort Lauderdale, which Fort Lauderdale may sound like it's a cute and bright and sunny town, but when you're in the city of Fort Lauderdale, it's like any other city. It's got its poor places, it's got its rich places, and the poor people were poor and scary, and the rich people were not. And I was neither. So
you were in the middle. You're just like, you were driving them around, basically.
I was in the middle, just trying to make friends, and you know, with anyone who I could make friends with. And the kids who were speaking Spanish wouldn't let me speak Spanish with them. And the kids who were speaking English were about the only choices I had. And little did I know, most of those kids were stoners. I didn't know how to handle stoners. I still don't know.
That's funny.
Yeah. So that's funny. That's a brief window into my life. So.
Man, you've got an exciting life, sir. You've got an exciting life.
It got really boring when we moved to the States.
America will do that to you. Go to China. Yeah. Yeah, that's picking up.
I hear it's a good place.
Yeah, they got 22 screens a day is what somebody told me. All those kids are working, man. Working hard. Good
those
for
tiny
them.
Tiny little hands. Not putting microphone jacks in iPhones.
Well, I mean, yeah, freed them up. Freed up a lot of time. All right, let's go to our listener comments. Let's start Scott, John, me. Scott?
All right, first one comes from Dave McGraw. He says, Field of Dreams, it's my favorite movie. Funnily enough, I didn't want to see it when it first came out. My friend and I went to it at the theater because the other film we wanted to see that day was sold out. Man, I floated out of that showing. It was the first movie that I guess inspired me and showed me that even if the majority of people around you think what you're doing is crazy, you just have to put that aside and go for it and don't give up. Ever.
That's good.
Jen Sansevier, what dreams may come changed my life a lot. It aided the change that was already starting. But that movie and its message definitely was a contributing factor during that life and in that time in my life, which I love that movie.
Yeah, I love that movie. And you talked before I had a chance, son of a bitch.
I'm sorry.
Field of Dreams, fantastic movie. And that is a very, very moving movie that I think not enough people have seen. It's one of those where I think everybody's seen it, and then you say, hey, did you ever see Field of Dreams? No, what's that? Is that the Kevin Costner movie? Man, go watch that movie. It's beautiful.
Absolutely. That is a beautiful story. Mm-hmm. That movie kind of opened me up to the idea that I should – at the time that when I first saw it, I was probably in my late teens, and my dad and I, though he was my dad, we didn't really have a friendly relationship. I was still very much afraid of his shadow, even though he's like 5'2". But that movie, yeah, I'm 6'2", so the math on that is hysterical. But that movie really started waking me up to, back to this theme, waking me up to the idea that I had to start building a relationship with him, to the extent that now there's not a Wednesday that goes by that I don't call him.
Oh, very cool, man. That's very cool. David Billups Jr., Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind made me start not sweating the small stuff that I sometimes used to argue about in relationships. That's a good one. Yeah, that's a good point.
That is a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Ronnie Yarrow says, Away From Her really impacted me because you could see how incredibly scary it is to be in the early stages of Alzheimer's and to realize it. Understanding the impacts on not only who you are, but also on the people left behind when you are gone and this other person is now there was very enlightening.
Yeah, that's heartbreaking is what it is. Just heartbreaking.
Yeah, I just earlier in the year, I lost my grandmother because of that, which it for the like last 10 years, I actually had to remove myself from having much of a relationship with her because I'm 6'2", and she's a tiny old lady. And she was from an era where big guys with beards are scary.
Mm-hmm.
So she would lose her mind anytime. Well, not really lose her mind, but whenever I was around, she thought I stole stuff from her. She didn't know who I was. And anytime I would have to remind her, I'd be like, Grandma, it's me, Johnny. And she'd be like, oh, and then forget 5 minutes later and then go back to being frightened of me. So it was much easier for her and for her caretakers if I just removed myself from her life, at least the last 5 years, I've had to really pull myself away from that.
Wow, you got a lot of sad stories, man. You got to find some upbeat. That's what you got to do.
I won the lottery when I got married to Courtney.
Oh, my God. Well, obviously, every story is involving Courtney. She said, Jeez, no woman is that cool. I mean, all women are that cool. Shit.
You know, your wife doesn't listen to this, so
that's
don't
true.
Worry about it.
That's true. That's right.
So it wasn't Lost that got you access, is what you're saying.
No, I'm just that cool, and I'm actually that cool. Adam
Moreau.
The Paradise Lost series of documentaries on HBO really changed my mind to the death penalty. I haven't seen those. Those are on my list of things to watch. But I've heard how that changes everyone's mind. Though I'm still suspect to what the actual story of that is.
I'm familiar with that. That sounds interesting. I love documentaries though.
So the Paradise Lost series is about the West Memphis Three.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Does that ring a bell?
Yep.
No.
Absolutely. Well, tell Scott because he doesn't know.
The West Memphis Three were there were three kids who were murdered in West Memphis. But they pinned the murder on Damian Echols and his two cronies. If you think that the Brendan Dassey confession is suspect, then you'll really think that the confession they used to get these three kids the death penalty is suspect. However, there's a lot of questionable things when it comes to these three kids. So there's a lot of it's a neat mystery to follow if you get into it. But yes, fortunately, if they are innocent, they did fortunately manage to get them off that death row and free. But there's still some that they I think, I'm not sure. So don't write me. If it turns out that they are innocent, then good. But there's still a lot. It's really interesting, though. You should watch it.
All right.
Is it me or you, Scott? I forgot where.
It's on you.
Okay, Ty Nelson. Guess I'd have to say Star Wars. I know it's a cliche answer, but I was 6 when it came out. What started with the movie turned into toys and then books, comics, etc. Through the years, many of my favorite family memories come from seeing it in the theater or at home. When it first debuted on HBO, my brother brought over his, I can't read today, over his bigger TV. Mom made my favorite dinner, and even Grandma came over. We had a nice dinner and watched it. I'd be a different person today without it. Good pick.
That's fair.
All right, Andrew G says, Citizen 4 is what changed my life and what I thought about technology advancing and the fact that the government is listening to our every phone call and reading our every email. It gave me a real wake-up call, and learning new news items about surveillance has become a side hobby for me presently. I need to see that.
Yeah, it's great. It's a great documentary.
What I'm doing for a living, I have to research all sorts of privacy stuff, and it's kind of terrifying. The government doesn't scare me nearly as much as private companies and how much information they're grabbing up about you and about people around you. So, mm-hmm.
Yep. And lastly, John?
Anna Maria Germa. For me, it was Star Wars as well. I know it's a common answer, but it totally opened me up to fantasy and sci-fi genre. I also spent a lot of time writing some pretty mediocre fan fiction, which was a lot of fun. and led me to other writing projects. When I was all the way through my teens, I had my friend Scott, and my friend Scott and I had a thing where he was always Han Solo, I was always Luke Skywalker. And we kind of lived those roles to the extent of like, I wasn't running around thinking I can cut people up with a flashlight, but I kind of looked at life the way I imagined Luke Skywalker did, and he was always kind of being a jerk like Han Solo.
I think Han Solo's awesome. I don't think he was ever a jerk. You shut up. That's right. That's 3 shut ups an episode. I've capped out. Well, thanks everybody for all those great comments. Remember, we post the topic in our Facebook group, not our page. There's a difference. Group, not the page. And we do that usually we're sending this episodes out on Tuesday nights now. We're trying to Wednesday morning. And that means that it usually goes up by Monday. So look in the Facebook group Monday, Tuesday morning. You should see the topic. Oof. Okay. Scott, what's this movie?
All right. Well, each week we pick a movie suggested by either our host or a listener, and the person has the option to either play a clip, offer a what am I, a riddle, limerick, or a haiku, or even reenact a famous quote from their movie. If you think you know what that movie is, you can email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com or through the contact tab in the app, and we'll give you a proper host shout-out on the next episode. Last week's pick was Troy's, and he did from Veronica Mars. And those that guessed it correctly were nobody.
Well, actually,
nobody got that one right.
Hang on. We got a bunch wrong, but one literally came in when we started recording that got it right. So one person got it right.
And who is that one person?
Mike Francis.
Congratulations, Mike Francis.
Congratulations.
Aaron,
what's his relationship with Troy?
it's Troy's best friend. That's what I'm guessing.
This week it's my chance to confuse everybody. So I've gone ahead and just done a What's This Movie clip. And here's your clip.
Werewolf.
Werewolf?
There.
What?
Werewolf. Their castle.
Why are you talking that way?
I thought you wanted to.
No, I don't want to.
Suit yourself. I'm easy.
It's a good clip, Scott. Good clip. Very, very good.
Thank you.
That's one an amazing clip. That's so awesome.
That's so awesome. These guys couldn't hear it, so John has no idea what it is. And Scott, he legitimately thinks this clip is awesome. So there we go. We've got a few reviews we're going to do real quick. Or, well, not real quick. I mean, take your time. First one is Blair Witch. I just saw Blair Witch this weekend. It is a sequel to the movie that popularized the found footage genre, The Blair Witch Project. This time, our lost footage follows James. He's a young man who stumbles across footage on YouTube, and he attributes it to his long-lost sister, Heather. You might remember her. The last time we saw her, she had just discovered her friend standing in a corner deep in the woods near Burkittsville, Maryland. You guys remember that? Both of you saw the original, right?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, I saw it in the theater.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Did either one of you actually think that it was real footage?
I did. At the time, I did not realize. I thought it was a real thing. And then I saw them being interviewed like the next week on Leno or something. I was like, wait a minute.
I didn't think it was real footage. However, for what they did, the movie did a great job of making me really afraid of a pile of sticks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn, the sticks moved.
That was also like the first movie I remember it just going completely to black for like long moments.
Mm-hmm.
That freaked me out as a kid.
Yeah, it was terrifying. And then the snot dripping out of her. That was actually scary at the time. Now it's a joke, but
yep.
It was pretty scary.
Yeah. I really loved that movie when it came out. And it had, you know, there's a lot of features to it that kind of remind me of old school radio dramas where you have to really engage with the original to get it. I was talking to my girl who cuts my hair, and she saw the movie when she was a kid, which I asked her when that was. And that was only like in the late aughts.
Okay.
and she was telling me how silly she thought the movie was. And I said, well, you only saw it in 2007, right? And she says, yes. And I said, well, in 1997, that was 99. Terrifying.
Not 97. Yeah, it wasn't even out then, so it wasn't that terrifying. Yeah. 99. Yeah.
Well, anyhow, in 99, it was still terrifying because it was the first, it was kind of the first of its genre, and it forced you to engage with a lot more back then than any movie had done then. And we're so used to engaging with some movies of its ilk that same way that I think that as it ages, it doesn't age very well.
Oh, I agree. I don't think any found footage movie really ages well, honestly. The rest of this movie, James gathers up his convenient filmmaking wannabe girlfriend, Lisa, his best friend, Peter, and Peter's girlfriend, Ashley. And then they also go with the pair that found the YouTube footage, Lane and Talia, and they venture into the same woods thinking his sister is still alive. It's pretty dumb in itself, but men can be pretty stupid, so I get it. Things happen, cameras fly around, the place goes nuts. That's the movie. I can't say anything else in regards to the plot without spoiling it, but I can say it was directed by Adam Wingard and written by Simon Barrett. These two are the pair behind The Guest, which is one of my favorite movies of the last few years, and also Your Next, which I think is a very fun horror movie. So these are people that I really respect. And here's what I liked and didn't like. I love some of the additions to found footage. They use drones. They use ear cams. They use a lot. They play with things a lot. And I think that they do a very good job of it. And I think for most of the movie, I was actually having a blast. The end was very creepy and very taut. But as we near that ending, that last probably 15, 20 minutes, it was painfully obvious that these shots were staged. And, you know, it's a movie. Of course, that's obvious. I mean, if you go watch the original Blair Witch, even though it looks really crappy now, a lot of that looks like it was genuine. That's why it felt so genuine. It felt genuine. When it gets to the end of this movie, it doesn't feel like we're watching found footage anymore. It feels like we're watching a carefully staged studio picture. You know what I mean? And that really takes you out of the entire facade. It took a lot of people out of it. And then there are too many times when the camera's filming when they should be running like hell. It's got the usual found footage stuff. Going forward when they should be turning back. There's one moment where it's painfully obvious they should just turn around and go home, and they don't do it. I hate when that happens in these kind of movies, but it happens in every horror movie, I think. Found footage just really, really bugs me because they're always supposed to be, it's real life. You know, in real life, I would have hauled my ass out of there. I would have ran so fast.
I would have tripped my friend.
Yeah, absolutely. I would have sacrificed you to the Blair Witch to get the hell out of the woods. Yep.
Well, that was what was so good about the original is, you know, obviously I hate shaky cam. Mm-hmm. But it worked for that first one because everything just felt like it was just done with a handy cam.
Right. It makes a big difference. It makes a huge difference. There's an end twist. I thought it was a little weak and very predictable. But overall, I still enjoyed most of it. I mean, critics are savagely beating the hell out of this movie. I don't agree with them. I honestly enjoy the movie the ending was fun. But it just really took me out of it because it didn't feel like found footage anymore. It felt like I'm watching a Hollywood movie. That made a difference in some aspect. And I thought the ending twist wasn't as cool as I think they thought it was. But I haven't enjoyed a found footage movie outside of Paranormal Activity as much as I did this one. So if $10 is the full price of admission, I give it $6. I had a good time. Am I gonna go out and buy it 3 copies of it? Probably not, but I would recommend it. So there you go. Go check it out.
Why would you need 3 copies?
In case 2 disappear and they end up in the next movie. You know what I mean? I don't know how that works.
I got you. Yeah. I got you.
I don't know how this works. All right, John, you saw a movie called Arc. What the hell is Arc?
I saw. So Arc came out on Netflix over the weekend. It stars Robbie Amell, and who we know from the he was in an episode or two of the X-Files revival, as well as he was the first Firestorm on Flash. And Rachel Taylor, which she's Trish Walker on Jessica Jones. And she was also in The Loft. So the synopsis for the story, real quick. Trapped in a lab, stuck in a time loop, a disoriented couple fends off mass raiders and while they're harboring an energy source that could save humanity. So if I were to try to give you the DNA for what this movie is, you take Groundhog Day, you take Coherence, and you take Safe Room, and you put it in a blender, and you get this movie. So we know what the premise is, and you know the premise of the story. You know the hook within the first 5 minutes. So that hook is the time loop. So what are we going to be looking for in the way of a movie that's going to be able to pull that off? Well, they have to have actors who can not distract you from that, and also they have to try to engage you into this very small space, which the house we're dealing with is a total of 3 rooms and a couple hallways. I really think that this movie was pretty fun. It's not science by any means, or not amazing by any means, but it was definitely worth something to spend time on Netflix watching. Mm-hmm. Robbie Amell and Rachel Taylor did a fantastic job. If they didn't make you invested in the story, at the very least, they didn't distract you from it. Your 4 supporting actors, who are essentially no names from what I can tell, did a great job as far as they were kind of scary and they did their jobs. I don't want to tell you too much about it because they really did a good job sticking the landing and selling it at the end. I would really suggest watching it. And if anything ever happens to Robbie Amell, we need to take a good look at Tom Cruise, because the whole time I'm watching Robbie Amell in this movie, I'm like, this is young Tom Cruise. This is Tom Cruise before he knew really how to turn the charisma on, mm-hmm. how to turn that movie star feature on. Everything about him is down to his weird Tom Cruise monkey feet, bear feet thing.
What?
Yeah, Tom Cruise has Monchichi feet.
I have never,
and so does Robbie Amell.
I've never looked at their feet, but that's an enlightening point. Thank you.
These are things that I grab onto. I see, you know, when their feet look like hands, it really kind of messes with me a little bit. so they both have that, and But so if Robbie Amell disappears and we see that either A, all of a sudden Tom Cruise is 10 years younger, we know that the Scientologist did a whole Thaden energy transfer thing, or if Tom Cruise disappears and all of a sudden Robbie Amell is getting amazing movies, we know that they just transferred brain, period. Because the kid, I mean, the kid is good. He is very much a baby Tom Cruise. So I really, but I, again, I like this movie. They did a really good job with putting it together. They really stuck the landing. I would give it 550.
Okay. Now, the last one I have, it's not available until October 11th on video on demand and DVD. I got a screener of it, but I really want to tell you guys about it so you can look for it, plan for it. It's actually a very, very cool story, and I didn't think it would be, and I'll explain why. It's called Doomed, The Untold Story of the Fantastic Four. In the early 90s, New Constantine Films wanted to make a Fantastic Four movie, and they wanted to make it fast. And I think a lot of people that are film buffs know kind of this story, but I don't know if you know the whole story, but it's really interesting. So they partnered with Roger Corman, and together ponied up $1 million, and they rushed the schedule. Marty Langford's new documentary, which is out on October 11th, video on demand, video on, and DVD, tells the story of how that actually happened, how it unfolded. And I normally don't get into Hollywood stories, because it's usually the exact same thing. Studio involvement, blah, 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 actors hated each other, blah, 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 blah. That's not the case with this one. Here we have a movie that was thrown together. A director who thought this was his break. Actors thought this was going to be their big shot. A studio who duped them all. All the actors and even Roger Corman do the talking in the movie. There's no distracting point of view. You know, it's basically the presentation of how things happen from the players. So it's not just a bunch of scripted narration telling you how everything happened. We're actually hearing it from the actors, from the director, from the producers. That's how we're hearing it. And it's riveting and extremely sad. For anybody who's ever had that dream of making it in Hollywood, this is a sad movie. It's heartbreaking. And the story, which I think is very important that you don't research it, just watch the documentary. It's actually mapped out extremely well so that the story unfolds as it happened for them, as opposed to telling you everything at the beginning. It really follows it linear. And I loved it. I can't recommend it enough. I couldn't care less about Marvel or comic book films walking into this. I didn't care about that history. I didn't know much about that history. And my biggest compliment for a documentary is if I leave and I care more about that subject, or I care even a little about that subject and I didn't before, then it's done its job. And it did. By the time this left, I felt bad for everybody involved. I felt like my heart had been slapped a little bit, you know, and I can only imagine what these guys have gone through because, you know, they were trying to make a good movie and everything that happened was just mind-boggling. It's an honest, bleak portrait of Hollywood at its worst. If $10 is the full price for admission, I give it $8. Really, really sold. Strong documentary.
That movie, the stories of that movie were a constant subject when I was in art school. I don't remember a lot of the stories, but I do remember that we would, first we'd talk about the movie in some of my art classes. Because it's so art adjacent, and especially with the whole comic book side of it. But then we'd also make fun of some of the special effects because a few people got their hands on copies of it to watch, and the special effects are terrifying.
Yeah, you got to watch the movie. I can't say anymore. Yeah. Watch the movie.
No, I'm sold. I'm definitely gonna sit down and watch it.
Box office top five, real quick, because nothing really did well. Sully dropped 38%. Which is a good movie, man. Go check it out if you haven't. That's Clint Eastwood and Tom Hanks. Really good movie. $21.6 million, and it made $70 million total. It's doing very, very well. It's Tom Hanks and Clint Eastwood. How could it not, it seems like. Blair Witch, everybody expected it to open to about $20 million. It opened with $9.5 million.
Oof.
Yeah, it's a big... I mean, it only costs like $5 million, $5 to $10 million to make it, but still, that's a big hit. Bridget Jones's Baby, though, $8.5 million. $8.5 million.
That came out?
Yeah. Exactly, right? Apparently nobody else knew either. Overseas, though, it did like $30 million overseas. It's really an overseas player. I think both of the previous ones made like $200 million overseas, so it'll hang around for a while. It'll do fine. Snowden opened to just $8 million. And Don't Breathe, still in the top five. Dropped 31% to $5.6 million. It's made $75 million total. That's a hell of a hit right there, boy. Hell of a hit.
Them.
Wouldn't it have made more sense to release Blair Witch next month?
Yeah, I don't understand the concept. I agree. 100%.
I mean, it's one of those weird things where, okay, if you do it like on the opposite end of the year, but at least do it in the season. I understand that people want Halloween to be like a, you know, 3 months season like Christmas is for people, apparently, but
it should be. Absolutely.
Well, makes you really think what that studio has planned for next month, because they must have something planned for next month.
Not Blair Witch 3, I can tell you that. Or was it before? Clearly not. Before, four. Actually. Yeah,
before. No, it would be 3, yeah.
No, before. There was a Blair Witch 2.
Or House Party 5.
Where Kid and Play get real. All right. What's coming out, John, on new releases? We've only got a couple of them.
We only got two on the new releases. First up, we got the Magnificent Seven. Seven gunmen from the Old West gradually come together to help a poor village against savage thieves. This one stars Denzel Washington, Chris Pratt, and Ethan Hawke. And then we have Storks. I really don't want to talk about it because it makes me sad just reading this. Storks have moved on from delivering babies to packages, but when an order for a baby appears, the best delivery stork must scramble to fix the error in delivering the baby. This stars Andy Samberg, Katie Crown, and Kelsey Grammer.
Okay.
Which one of these movies are you guys going to rush off to go see this coming weekend?
If I got to choose, I'm definitely going for Magnificent Seven. And not just because I don't really have any interest in Storks, but ever since I saw the trailer for Magnificent Seven, I it just intrigued me. I love Chris Pratt. I'm not as big into Westerns as Aaron is, but this just looks awesome. It just looks really Chris Pratt just looks like he belongs in a Western. I feel like that should have happened a long time ago, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
He looks so magnificent, I would say. Someone had to say it. Come on, someone had to say it. It had to be said.
had to be done.
Absolutely.
And don't we have a written review on that too on the site?
We do.
Dave McGraw.
Dave McGraw. Yep. He saw it early and he said it's very, very good. So he wrote a review. So check it out. It's on the website. If you want a detailed analysis of the movie without any spoilers, he did a very good job, no spoilers. And also we have a Remake This Movie Right for this movie coming out. If you go to Remake This Movie Right in the in your app or go to the website, RemakeThisMovieRight.com. We actually, S.S. Wilson came back, writer of Tremors, writer of Short Circuit, came back and did a remake of this movie because he wanted to do this movie. He did that with us. So look for that. It drops on Friday when the movie comes out. Boom. Check that out. Now, what do I want to see? This. That's it. Storks looks good. I actually think it looks very good. And my wife's niece, my niece, Gianna, went and saw it because I had a screener and I let her take it or let her go see it. And she loved it. She loved it. And she's a wonderful kid. And she kind of cries during cartoons. She gets really emotional, really invested in cartoons. And she didn't cry. She just enjoyed it. She smiled the whole time. So I'd say that's a rave recommendation from a child.
How much would she give it out of $10?
I don't even know if she has $10, Scott. I mean, she's like 3 or 4.
If $10 was the full price of admission, mom and dad would pay $7.
She's only got choopies. That's all she's got is choopies.
Exactly. What about you, John? What do you want to see either one of these?
Magnificent Seven. I like Scotty. I'm not a Western guy. I have enjoyed Westerns from time to time, but I don't say that's a Western. I need to go see it. However, I am a Denzel Washington in action kind of guy. I'll go see if it's an action movie that has Denzel Washington or a somewhat serious movie that has Denzel Washington. I'll watch the crap out of that because it's going to be interesting if he can make a movie about a train that runs away and make two of them, and both of them are kind of interesting, he can do anything he wants, and I'll go see it. Yep. That's how I feel.
That's pretty accurate. It's pretty accurate. Scott, what's coming out on Blu-ray and Video On Demand?
We're looking at September 27th. The first one coming on disc is Central Intelligence. This was the movie that stars Dwayne Johnson and Kevin Hart. After he reconnects with an awkward pal from high school through Facebook, a mild-mannered accountant is lured into the world of international espionage. Now, Aaron, I know you saw this one, but I could not find a score on it.
750, man. I had a blast with that movie. I want a sequel. Yep.
Really?
Yeah. I love that movie.
It was, right? It was such a surprise.
Yeah, it really was. It was a big surprise. I was expecting to be a little, like, tired of it, but, you know, The Rock's right up there with Denzel for me in movies. Anything he does is pretty great. I thought I was going to get tired of Kevin Hart, but really he was just fine playing the straight man to The Rock not being the comedian.
And who would have saw that coming, as The Rock being so entertaining to watch in film?
I mean, great. Yeah. Can you smell what he's cooking? Apparently, everybody can.
Also, we've got the Neon Demon. When aspiring model Jessie moves to Los Angeles, her youth and vitality are devoured by a group of beauty-obsessed women who will take any means necessary to get what she has. I didn't really have a whole lot of interest in seeing this until I saw that Christina Hendricks is in it. Mm. Also, Elle Fanning and Keanu Reeves. Next up is Shallows. A mere 200 yards from shore, surfer Nancy, played by Blake Lively, is attacked by a great white shark, with her short journey to safety becoming the ultimate contest of wills. Aaron reviewed that one on episode 235 and gave it $7. I also saw it, did not review it, but man, that was a surprise. I did not expect to enjoy that movie as much as I did. And
really solid.
What an awesome, awesome ending, too. Mm-hmm. Just so good.
Great performance by Blake Lively. She's the real deal.
Mm-hmm. We previously talked about Warcraft. That's also coming to disc. As an orc horde invades the planet Azeroth using a magic portal, a few human heroes and dissenting orcs must attempt to stop the true evil behind this war. Aaron gave that one $6.50 back on episode 233. And I feel like I got to check that one out because a lot of people hated it, but Aaron said it was pretty decent.
Everybody I know that actually saw it liked it. I don't know a single person, and I'm not doing that thing where everybody I know likes it. I didn't talk to a single person that actually saw it and disliked it.
Mm-hmm. Just yeah, that recommendation on the site that you put up made me interested in something that I didn't want to go see. So I am actually interested in at least seeing it now.
Did you play World of Warcraft, John?
I managed to escape that one.
Me too.
I don't know how I did, but that one was one that all my friends were playing. I think that they started playing that one right when bad things were happening for me. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to take this equation, take this out of the equation so that I can focus on more important things.
Well, then $15 a month is kind of scary. So
it's very expensive, man. I'd rather be outside.
Yeah, that was never a fear for me. I played a lot of those style games. And last summer, I got hooked on Neverwinter on Xbox. So and I was able to break that habit, too.
Don't be Scott. Don't morph this into a conversation about every game you've ever played. Come on, let's go.
The last one we got one more for Blu-ray and DVD. It's called Cell. When a mysterious cell phone signal causes apocalyptic chaos, an artist is determined to reunite with his young son in New England. It stars John Cusack and Samuel L. Jackson. So who's dad and who's son? That's what I want to...
Okay.
Justin reviewed this one back on episode 233, and this might be the lowest score I've ever seen him give, but he only gave it $2.
Yeah, he said it was awful. So
apparently. Not the good one to recommend there. We also have a couple of video on demand releases. The first one is Miss Stevens, which both Justin and Aaron saw at the South by Southwest Festival. This one hits video on demand on September 20th. It's a comedy focused on a teacher who chaperones a group of high schoolers to a state drama competition. I'm in just because it's centered around a teacher, so I got to see it.
It's really good, man. Seriously, it's a very good character drama, and it's just really good, really well done.
Mm-hmm. And we've also got Goat coming out on September 23rd. Reeling from a terrifying assault, a 19-year-old boy enrolls into college with his brother and pledges the same fraternity. What happens there in the name of brotherhood tests the boy and his loyalty to his brother in brutal ways. That actually sounds really interesting.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. Mm-hmm.
It does.
And that's it.
All right, John, what's next?
We got the Ho trivia game or feature today. Each week, when conducive to time.
Conducive. That's not conductive. Conducive.
I like conductive. It sounds more electrifying. We select a game or a feature based on the selections below. I wasn't supposed to read that.
No, not really, but it's cool.
Okay. So we're looking at the, I think this week is the 30th anniversary of Crocodile Dundee. Scotty, how do you feel about Crocodile Dundee?
I actually saw Crocodile Dundee back on like VHS back in the day. And because my stepdad loved this movie for some reason. And I just sat down to watch it, and I think I was too young to really get the jokes, but I was old enough to appreciate the girl in a thong, bending over at the lake or whatever, and that's pretty much all I remember from that movie, other than him like walking on shoulders at the end to get to her. That's not a knife.
Awesome,
that's
knife.
A knife.
Yep.
Those are like literally the only three things I remember from the movie. So,
would you guys say that is a classic, or would you say it's an overrated classic?
I would say I'm going to go with overrated classic. However, I did as a kid love that movie, and if I try to watch it now, I don't have the same sort of appreciation because I guess I'm not a kid anymore. And I don't. There was a lot of things in there, like the whole when he's in that bar and he's talking to that one girl and he thinks he's getting somewhere and somebody tells him it's actually a dude in a dress.
Yeah. That's Sheila.
I'm going to go with overrated. I think that if you were to make that movie today, it would feel way too gentrified. I mean, there would be no way to make that movie today. Just because of everything that's in it, at least make money off of it. It'd be more TV movie than anything else.
Yeah.
I didn't not have a conducive thought at all, but hey, that's what I got.
We just had to work it in there. It is a product of its time. I love that movie. I love it. Sincerely, when it came out, I loved that movie. I probably saw it like 3 times in the theater. I thought Paul Hogan was great. Then he made a bunch of other movies that weren't, and I realized he was not great. He was better at commercials. But mm-hmm. I rewatched it probably a couple of years ago, and it does not hold up. There's still the scenes that you remember still work. But as a movie, it's just like, man, that's so 80s. It's so very 80s. And sometimes you watch a movie and you're like, I understand why it's a classic and I get it and everything else. But then you watch one like this and it's like, it was such a phenomenon at the time. I don't get it anymore. I don't get it anymore. As much as I love the movie, I realize it looks like an 80s movie now. And I don't think it works as much anymore. I still love it, though. It's just I realize that I'm watching it through the nostalgia glasses.
Yeah.
They made 2 sequels too, didn't they?
Well, it made 1 sequel and then whatever Crocodile Dundee in L.A. was. So was it a sequel? Was it just a shitty movie? I don't know, but it's one of those options.
It was both, boss.
What was the movie that Paul Hogan did after that with when he was a fallen angel or almost, a thief?
Almost an angel.
Paul.
No, almost
Paul.
Almost an angel. Paul was the – I think he played Paul, but I think it was called Almost an Angel.
Yeah, I think you're right. That movie, I actually really liked that movie that he did.
Yeah, it was cute. I mean, he was...
It's off the subject, though.
No, Paul Hogan was one of those guys where he had a nice run for like 2 years, and then he was gone. I mean, everything he did after that did not work. People just wanted to see him in the snakeskin or whatever that was, alligator hat, and that's it. That's all I wanted from him. I wonder what he's doing now. We should call him up.
Outback commercials.
Him and... Linda Kozlowski. That's who was.
She doesn't even look like the same human being anymore. It's dead. And that's unfortunate.
That's too bad. But hey, what are you going to do? Time will hit us all, my friend. Time will hit us all. All right. Any recent film or TV recommendations we didn't previously discuss before we close on out of here? John, anything you want to mention real quick?
I'm getting caught up with Lucifer, like you mentioned. Go watch it if you're not watching it, guys. That's a cute, cute show. I it's a lot of fun. Tom Ellis is as cool as I thought he was going to be. And yeah, I would say go for it. Aaron mentions it, says it's a good show. It's a good show.
I try to tell you. I wish more people would listen to me. Damn it. Hoo-ah. Okay, so what about you, Scott? Anything you want to mention?
Well, one of the shows that I mentioned on our TV episode last week that was high on my list was The Good Place. And that actually debuted last night as of this recording, and I got a chance to watch it. They actually did like 2 episodes back to back, so you got an hour long of it. Mm-hmm. Oh man, it's just as good as I was hoping it was going to be. It's so fun to see Ted Danson on screen again, and he just owns that role. He's just so quirky and silly and sweet. I just like watching him. Everything he does is just so funny. And from the, you know how they did a little preview of like next week or whatever at the end?
Yeah.
It just looks like he's going to get better and better. And I just can't wait to see it. His whole thing about fist bumping. Kristen Bell is just, she's so much fun to watch because I always know her as like the sweet character. And when they show clips of her in her past life or in her life when she was alive, she's just a total jerk. But it's hilarious to watch her. And I'm glad it's turning out well, and I'm going to continue to watch it. I really like it a lot. Aaron, you saw it too, right?
Yeah. What the fork? What the fork? Holy shirt. Yeah. It's a concept. I'm really curious how they're actually going to make last longer than a season. I'll be perfectly honest. Right. It's a very high concept. So it has that risk of hitting that moment where you just got nowhere else to go with it. It really does have that risk. So I am worried about that. But the episodes that we saw, because I think it's like two that they just put together for one block. Mm-hmm. And it was really good. I thought she was great. She's great in everything she does. She is just a delight. And to see what an awful human being she is, and she's just trying to find a way to be good, and can she be good? And I really enjoyed it. I think The Good Place is a show that I would definitely watch again. I set up my DVR. I'm good to go.
It actually did have an LSD moment that I thought that was a little weird.
Yeah, they did have a moment where there's shrimp flying around and giraffes, and that was not funny. That was
it really wasn't.
It was a really missed joke. It just didn't work at all. And I feel bad because
the effects just look really cheap too.
Awful. Like it was made on the CW when it was the WB. That's how bad the effects look. Yeah. So definitely. All right. Let's go to our. We got some emails and we got some stuff. But Alexander Wass had messaged us, and he wanted to ask a few questions about our visual requirements. What we like to, how we like to watch some stuff. What we think about some stuff. You guys got a second? You ready? You ready?
I'm ready.
All right.
Go. Sure.
What? He's got four, I think, a couple questions. Okay. First, and you don't have to drone on about it forever, but just what equipment do you guys favor for home viewing? Projectors, LED TVs, plasma, etc. Which is your preference, Scott?
For me, I go LCD, but I'm not 100% sure why. I bought my TV close to 10 years ago, and when I had the choice between LCD and plasma at the time, I had heard that plasmas were more fragile and broke down more often or something like that. So I went LCD, but I can't say that I have a preference, and I obviously haven't bought a new one since. So that's where I'm at right now. So I obviously need to get updated.
All right, John.
I've got a gorgeous LCD that is actually just might be upgraded as of next month, because some sweet an adorable girl who's trying to torture me at the moment has decided that she wants to upgrade my TV for my 40th, which is next month. But my current TV is this gorgeous thing where you have to, it's a Samsung and it's an LCD. And if you watch the right shows on it, it makes everything look like you're watching a soap opera. For some reason, I really enjoy that feature. But I am going to upgrade to a 65-inch Kurbjobby LED next month. I'm pretty excited.
Nice. I will tell you, if you keep saying nice things about your wife, you're going to A, get made fun of horribly here, and B, we're going to do everything we can to make it unhappy for you. That's just how we roll here. So you just tread lightly, my friend. You're sounding like an ass-kisser right now.
I, number one, dare you to try to make me feel bad about being nice to my wife.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. He just took it to a different level. God. All right. Whatever. You're wonderful. Ass kisser. All right. Well, I'd love to have a projector, Alexander, but I like to eat more. So I'm going to have to stick with TVs and LCD, LED. Either one's fine by me. Plasma is fine, but I mean, I don't think plasma has really, they kind of morphed out, right? They're no longer really making them anymore, are they?
Yeah, they're not really making them. I got a plasma in the bedroom that's that actually, if you turn it off and you can see everything you watch for the day. Mm, so
yeah, not good.
It's a little distracting.
So what's the view on 4K? Is it worth the upgrade? Here's my quick answer. My problem with 4K, it's almost too clear. It's like watching a play, and I find that very distracting, so I'm perfectly content with Blu-ray. I really don't need 4K. Anybody else?
I can't wait to have my 4K TV because it is like watching it in play, and I love that. I'm a super visual person myself, so I love being able to see details. Now, the only time that ever really backfires is when you watch something like the original Clash of the Titans, and you can see that they're dealing with like movie screens and painted things. That's the only time that there's a problem, but I'm excited for 4K.
I'm excited, but I'm kind of in the middle of you guys. I think it does look better, although I've only seen one 4K TV, so I guess I have to get a better look. But to me, the delta between where we're at now and 4K isn't as big as it was when we jumped to 1080. I felt like 1080p was just made my mouth hit the floor. But it just doesn't feel like it's as much of an improvement. But with that being said, when my TV dies, I'm probably going to go the 4K route. So I'm actually more interested in the HDR aspect that they're including in 4K TVs, the high dynamic range. Mm-hmm. If you're not familiar with that, they basically take multiple exposures and put them into a single frame, and it kind of enhances the brightness. And I'm really intrigued by that. So if you do get a 4 TV, make sure it does have the HDR option on it as well, especially if you're into gaming. That's going to make a big deal on that side too. So
also make sure it's one of those OLEDs that when it goes black, it actually shuts off the pixel, as opposed to turning everything gray or something. That makes a big difference too.
Soundbars versus 5.1 or 7.1. I will go 7.1 because that's always better than a soundbar to me. It's huge. I love it.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I've heard some good soundbars, but I never feel like I get that same experience of things being behind me or off to the sides. I know that some people have had better experiences than I have, but just nothing beats 7.1 for me.
I've got a 5.1 now that's kind of ancient that serves the purposes, but I've been eyeing one of those Sonos systems where you've got the wireless speakers in different portions of the house. And I really like the idea of having the soundbar in the front, the subwoofer cells with no wires, and then the satellites behind you.
Good call. Lastly, do you like chilling in bed, watching a film on your laptop, or with headphones? Scott, you can do this one because I know you do it.
I do. Actually, that's where I watch the majority of my Netflix and Hulu and HBO and all that is. But I don't even use my laptop. I actually use my phone, which sounds kind of crazy and uncomfortable in bed. But I actually bought, and you're going to laugh at me, I should post a picture of this in the group or something just to show how crazy I am. I bought an apparatus that basically clamps onto my headboard and is like a long wire that literally holds my phone in front of my face.
saddest thing so I ever heard.
It sounds sad, but like I was watching my
we
phone
have
on
sad
my,
Hulk music to play.
No, but I was watching it on my side. Like I lay on my pillow on my side of my head, and I would put the phone like and kind of prop it up there. But it was giving me like serious neck issues, and I had no problem sleeping on my back. So I had to figure out a way to. I wasn't gonna hold my phone above my head with my hand. It would be tiring. So I looked on Amazon and I found this little thing that clamps my phone right in front of my face, and it's fantastic. I know it sounds goofy, but man, I love just sitting on my back and watching TV and not having to worry about it because I can't watch the actual TV because my wife sleeps and has trouble sleeping with the noise. So I just headphone it up with my phone, and that's what I do.
And the music's back. All right, John, what about you? Any preference?
I prefer watching things on the TV. If I have to, if I'm going to watch something and I want to pay attention to it, then I'm definitely going to watch it on a TV. I can watch stuff in my office on one of my computer monitors. I can't watch anything on my phone because being so visually driven as I am, I want to see a bigger presentation. And it was one of the reasons why I love my Roku, because if I do have to be mindful of my sleeping wife, I can just plug my headphones into the Roku controller and it does the wireless sound there. But that's the only time I'll do headphones.
Yeah, I have a TV in my room, so neither. I'm not going to watch my laptop if I have a TV in my room. I'm sorry. The TV's going to be on, but honestly, generally if I go to bed, man, I'm going to sleep. So I just go to, unless Jennifer Lawrence happens to be tied down, which has happened on occasion in my dreams. But outside of that, I just go to sleep. I don't really watch. I might watch some Psych.
You weren't supposed to talk about that.
Well, I think it's out there. I mean, now she's with Pratt. She left me, so whatever. Screw you, Pratt. I mean, it's not bad enough that you got to take the dinosaurs and Denzel. Now you got to take my girl, too?
Don't forget Anna Faris. He's got Anna Faris, too.
What you're not telling everybody is you say when you go into your bedroom and go to sleep, even though you have a TV in there, but you're staying out up in the living room until 2 o'clock in the morning.
This is true.
Watching TV or whatever. Falling asleep on the couch and then eventually like crawling into bed and going to sleep.
Well, it was a cooler story until you threw that in there. But yes, that is true. Yeah, I fall asleep on the couch a lot watching TV. It happens.
We're having a good time until Scott showed up and started telling the truth.
I know. Truth sucks.
Whistleblower.
All right, we got some emails, some messages, and we're out of here. The first one, I'm actually gonna do the first one just because it just happened, and it comes from Mike Francis, who is the only person that got their what's this movie last week, right? Or what's this TV show? He says, "Hey hoes, really love the TV pilots episode. I know the show is currently in what Jules Winfield from Pulp Fiction might refer to as a transitional period. That's true, but I wanted you to know that the chemistry the four of you had was fantastic. While no one could ever replace Brian or fill Justin's shoes, John and Troy were the next best thing. Aw, John. There you go. That's aww. Nice. The show was always... Did you send this in? Is your code name Mike Francis? Or is your wife's code name Mike Francis, maybe? Okay. The show is always a blast for me, but it was especially fun to see you focus solely on TV for a change. Notice, Scott, he didn't deny that. I enjoy movies, but enjoy TV just a bit more, and this show featured some of my favorites. Thank you for all the hours of fun. Please keep up the great work, Mike.
Awesome. Thank you, Mike. That's awesome. I really appreciate the compliment there.
Thank you, Mike / Courtney. All right. Now, just kidding. Just kidding. All right. John, you've got a message from your boy.
From my boy, Steve Peterson, who's actually having a good time. I hope he's having a really good time in L.A. at the moment. Okay, good. I can actually respect this show for once. A proper winner finally came out on top. And he's talking about the Lost winning on the Battle Royale.
Spoiler
alert. Does that sound like Steve?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the only show that he thinks is worthy of anyone's time. Yeah, I get it. Scott, you got a couple?
First one comes from Angela Lee Wallach. She says, since my comment was gypped, I'll repeat it. How did we skip her comment last week? I don't know how that happened.
I don't know. But
I blame Aaron.
I blame me too. Every day. All day.
So she says that Battlestar Galactica is best, followed closely by Futurama. Also, I would have voted X-Files.
Yes!
Thank you for getting You're the Best in my head.
So that's who we should have called. That's who we should have. Angela, next time I'm calling you. For whatever it is, we're calling you. You're it.
We just call her?
Yeah. We're just going to dial you up for the hell of it. We'll be like, what's up?
Yeah.
What's up, Angela?
Congratulations, you are caller number 10. Alexander Wass, who gave us those great questions earlier, also wrote in. He said, great show, guys. I liked how you played a small clip from each of the pilots. I think I may be in the minority that hasn't actually watched Lost, one of the shows I have never got around to watching.
You should watch it.
I'm just going to leave that one alone.
You should watch it and then be sad when you get to the end. Just kidding. What? Oh, I'm just kidding. I'm sorry. You'll be sadder if you watch the X-Files end, though. And lastly, Wayne Edwards, initial thoughts, one of the best episodes of The Hollywood Outsider ever. Bravo, Aaron and company. And I asked him to elaborate. He said, the Battle Royale was great. There are so many pilots that you guys mentioned and I thought of later that fit well. And I agreed with. Very entertaining. Number two, I was impressed by the fall TV picks by you all. I don't watch too much network TV, but after your recommendations, I have a couple on my list. Number three, the discussion of the state of the TV industry was very thorough, informative, and thought-provoking. And last but not least, Scott and I being in agreement on the greatness of Newsroom. And we are both in agreement on The Walking Dead. The Walking Dead is a great show, but I was done after the third season. There is no end in sight.
I'm still watching it, though.
What are you going to do? What are you going to do? All right. Well, thanks, man. Yeah. We got a lot of compliments in that episode. So great job, all. Nice job, all.
Woohoo!
Good job, everybody.
Yay, team. Please review us on iTunes, since you thought it was a great show last week. If this one was just as awesome, go to iTunes and please review us, because that would be fantastic, and we would greatly appreciate it. And also join our Facebook group. Go to The Hollywood Outsider, or go to Facebook, and then type in The Hollywood Outsider. Like the page, join the group. There's a lot of good conversations there. And you can tweet us at @H_Outsider. Stay through the credits for outtakes, find other episodes, reviews, and other info at TheHollywoodOutsider.com. Email is feedback@TheHollywoodOutsider.com. That's feedback@TheHollywoodOutsider.com. Or just hit the contact tab in your app. Remember to grab The Hoe on the Go with our Apple or Android apps. We're also on Spotify. You can subscribe as well in your podcast app of choice. Thank you to Scott and John for being here.
Thank you very much for having me, guys. I really love being here again.
Thanks for coming back.
Seriously, John, man, I really enjoyed talking with you, man. This is
I really enjoy this too. This is I was last 2 weeks have been kind of difficult for me. I've been a little under the weather. Apparently, this got me out of my little bit of a funk. I feel much better right now just doing this with you guys than I have for most of the week.
That's cool. We don't really care, but that's a cool story. Thank you.
Hollywood Outsider cures all ailments.
Well, guys, thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. And remember, the next time you go to a theater, buy popcorn. See, I liked it better when we were just saying we didn't care. And then Scott made it, we heal. we are Jesus with wine. That's what we are. We just bring it. I don't know what I was going with that, but I got it wrong, I'm sure.
I was going to let you just keep going because obviously how far you have to go to dig out of that hole.
Was not paying attention in class, in that Bible class at all. Scott, you were. What did Jesus do? Did he heal anybody? I don't remember.
He did. He spit on some clay and shoved it in somebody's eyes and they were able to see.
Okay. So that happened. All right.
I still hear that little fuzz in the background, but I'm not convinced it's not me anymore.
No,
I'm not convinced it's not.
It's not you. It's Skype, I think.
Yeah.
Definitely Skype.
Definitely Kmart. Definitely Kmart.
Oh, Wapner. Wapner's on.
It does that whenever you guys shut up, bitches. It does that whenever you guys stop talking. That's when it starts. I'm trying to figure it out, and I can't figure it out. Save my life.
We just need to stop. We need to not stop talking, John.
We need to never stop, never stopping.
Yeah, just keep going, and we never stop, and there's no pauses in between. It'll be like a Troy Heinrichs episode.
I'm putting that in the outtakes. You're welcome. Good luck asking that boy for an audio favor.
We take Umbridge now.
Do you take Dorothy Umbridge? Is that her name from Harry Potter?
I don't think her name's Dorothy Umbridge.
What is it?
It's Dolores Umbridge.
Well, it's the same thing, right? I mean,
it's the same difference. They're so close.
She likes it when I call her Deborah.
She likes the cat.
Yeah. Wait, what?
Wait, did we cross a line just a second ago?
No.
Now we're crossing lines?
No, there's no lines. We're all good. We're golden. Okay. I just sent an email.
They're blurred
actually.
Lines.
I just sent an... did you really just do like a... What's that guy's name?
Mr. Paula Patton?
Yeah, that's what we call him. Mr. Paula Patton.
Isn't he like somebody's Duffy or somebody's son?
Thick. Alan Thick.
Alan Thick's son.
So,
Robin
so he's
Thick.
Robin Thick. Robin Thick.
So we had to actually go up the family lineage to get that.
Supposedly there was some big picture that got out because I used to watch because I get bored at work sometimes. And I used to watch the websites and there was a picture of him with some party girl. She's like a professional party girl that goes around to all the parties and hooks up with dudes. And like the picture up front looks like it's a sweet picture of two friends kind of hugging for a picture. But when you look at the reflection in the mirror behind them, he's got his hand up her ass as if she's like Kermit.
Like she's a Muppet?
Yes. He's totally Muppetizing her.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, you can't puppeteer your ladies, man. You just can't do it. Guys.
You can only puppeteer one woman at a time. They get upset when you start doing it to the other ones.
Yeah, and plus, how dirty is his hand? Ew. That's just gross.
In the middle of a bar, I mean, there's things that happen there.
Yeah, that's why you don't eat the peanuts.
Apparently.
I'm just thought I'd be a spectator and watch you do everything.
No, I just wanted to make sure something wasn't thrown at me. That was my responsibility, so.
Okay.
All right, put your phones down.
I just found out today, so.
That's true. He's winging it. Good job, though. Good job.
I'm shooting from the hip here. I'm total hand soloing it.
You are Judd Nelson all the way.
Absolutely.
Nelson.
Oh, I knew Scott wouldn't get it. Did you get that, John?
Briefly.
No, you didn't get it either. He was in a movie.
New Jack City.
From the 80s called From the Hip.
Oh, I thought you were going to go with New Jack City.
This is why I can't make jokes to you guys. See, I'm not the problem. You're the problem. It's my
audience. Make an obscure 80s movies reference. And
I was counting on my psych mate, and he let me down yet again. Nice job.
I'm your psych mate, not your Judd Nelson mate.
You remind me of that scene in Dumb and Dumber. He's like, ooh, they have the monkeys. They were a big influence on the Beatles.